Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. Welcome back to all my listeners. Welcome to all my new listeners. Last week, we talked about whether Mr. Obama is incompetent, a fool, inexperienced, or brilliant in executing a plan, distracting you with his right hand while he goes about his business, planned long in advance with his shadow government, with his left. I promised you, here's two apologies for you folks. I promised you last week that I would talk about the Republican candidates and the discourse on Mr. Obama and his plan went over. In fact, we're going to be finishing up that this week to begin with. I also promised you that this week we would have a half an hour interview with Larry Stancil, who's a terrific host up in Montana, and on whose show I've been a number of times. This would be the first time on my show. The guy's great, former military, etc. Well, here's what I'm going to do. Number one, I'm going to keep my promise to you this week on my thoughts on the Republican candidates. That's going to come toward the end of the show. And, you know, I mean, that's quite the Donnybrook. Yeah, I definitely have some opinions on that. And I'm going to finish up this, shall we call it, theory of mine, which is that everything that Mr. Obama and the shadow government of czars and others that he's built right under our very noses while we've been asleep, slumbering, if you would, at the switch, is all part of a plan that he's executing brilliantly. And unfortunately, given the latest polls, 50% of the people in the United States, because of their normalcy bias, actually believe the nonsense that he spews every time he talks. Because this guy really can't talk without lying. He either lies by not telling you the truth, or he lies by misstating the truth, or he lies by omitting very important ingredients which would alter your opinion of his words. Very clever. Very clever. Mr. Stancil's interview is going to be next week, and that's so we can give him a full hour. I gave a little thought here between shows, and really, this is such an important topic, whether or not Mr. Obama is proceeding according to a plan or not, and the Republican candidates, and that entire morass that's going on in the Republican Party, that I didn't want to shortchange either one of them. And I think what would have happened had I done the interview, Larry and I talked about it, is I wouldn't have done a good job finishing up this very important thought process we started last week together, and his interview would have been curtailed, and that would have been a loss to you. So, next week, the full hour with Larry Stancil, and this week, finishing up Mr. Obama's plan for us. Oh, yes. He definitely has a plan for us. Last week, we ended talking about the Constitution. Remember, the attack of the progressives, communists, socialists, whatever you want to call them, they're all the same. Their attack is at the core, at the root, at the bastion of American values, and that is faith, family, and the Constitution. They cannot win. They cannot establish their socialist slash communist, and some people would say fascist, which is the marriage of state and business, utopia that they have planned for us, with, of course, them at the top of the cream. You know, they're the ruling elite. They know best, without taking down those three pillars. And last week we talked about their attack on religion, and we talked about what Mr. Obama says and what he does. Took him 9 months to join a church, etc. I won't rehash those points. We talked about the attack on basically Christianity, certainly religious freedom, at the same time an attack on the First Amendment of the Constitution, with this little rabbit that he pulled out of the communist hat, which is basically that if you know your religious outfit, you have to go against your morals to conform to Obamacare or lose funding and pay fines and all sorts of other nasty stuff. And we also talked about his attack on faith, all of which is mixed in together. You know, this is all an intertwined attack. It's an attack on many fronts. Haven't you noticed, particularly over the past year, how the drumbeat of events keeps quickening? The tempo is ever increasing. Every day there's something new that these guys throw at the wall like spaghetti to see if it'll stick. You know, one day it's something to do with racial things. Another day it's something to do with women's health care. That's the latest rage. Another day it's something to do with some kind of international mess that we're into because of their incredibly illegitimate foreign policy. But it's one thing after another. And you know, each thing distracts you while they do something else. That's for sure. It's all part of the plan. And they are masters at it. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of Saul Alinsky. He's kind of the father of radicals in this country. In fact, he wrote a book called The Handbook for Radicals. And I would really suggest you buy it and you read it, because it'll open your eyes to some of the tactics that these people are using, unfortunately, very effectively. That's Handbook for Radicals, Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky is one of Mr. Obama's, shall we say, idols, mentors, if you will. In fact, Mr. Obama writes about him in his various treatises. There's others, too, but that one kind of pops out and slaps you in the face. Because this guy was all about social justice, you know, which is another, that's a code word for redistribution of wealth, elimination of private property, which the United Nations, by the way, says is the root of all social injustice in the world. Yes, if you have private property, you are socially unjust. I digress just a bit. Last week, we also talked about how Barry, our friend Barry, and Michelle, as Rush would call her, how they are what they are, you know? They were steeped in black liberation. They were steeped in Marxism through their parents. And they have been steeped in socialist progressive mores through the universities, etc. I don't know if you know this, but Mr. Obama, in fact, got his law degree and taught constitutional law. That's right. This guy knows the Constitution, and he understands that if he chips away at it with his executive orders, which somehow our Congress doesn't have the balls to stand up and stop, and he chips away at it with Obamacare, which is now going up to the Supreme Court, and it's going to go up to the Supreme Court again on this religious mandate and edict. But if he keeps chipping away, he weakens that document. And at the same time, if he can kill two birds with one stone, like this healthcare deal, you know, if he can attack religion and he can attack the Constitution at the same time, both of which, by the way, affect the family, the third pillar, then he's that much further ahead. I mean, you know, who wouldn't blow off a shotgun shell and kill three ducks rather than one? The Constitution is kind of the backbone, if you will, of all we are. It's an amazing document. You know, the health care bill was 2,000 some odd pages. The Constitution is 3. The Constitution has lasted 234 years and built the greatest country the planet has ever seen. And the health care bill, shall we say, is struggling, thank God. And hopefully will be struck down as unconstitutional by the court this summer. So sometimes simple is good. And sometimes simple is the best to defend. That's one thing we have going for us. There's not a lot of loopholes in the Constitution. You can't build a lot of loopholes into 3 pages. I think that the Constitution is probably one of our greatest protections against his attack on the other 3 pillars. And the attacks are very purposeful. We talked about last week what he personally said. Remember, this is the guy who stood out there in a long blue wool, cool trench coat on that cold day in January with a million adoring fans out there and swore an oath. He swore an oath to the people of the United States, to the country, which is the United States, and he swore an oath to the Constitution to preserve and protect it from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, I don't think he's done a very good job on that. In fact, I think when he took that oath, he wasn't telling the truth. And I think he stood up there in that snowy January day, and he knew damn well that he didn't intend to keep that oath. The attack on the Constitution and the attack on faith together constitute an attack on family. Let me kind of try and bring you through that thought process just a bit. Sit back and think what drives your family. You know, whether your family unit is you, or whether it's you and a friend, or whether it's you and your wife or husband and your kids, whatever your family unit is, what drives it? I mean, there's certain basic things, right? It's pretty much the same for all of us. Not all of us are religious. Not all of us believe in a higher spirit. I mean, that's totally up to everybody. That's what the First Amendment, which is under attack by Obama, is about. But religion, a faith of some type, even if it's a faith in not having faith, is part of the family structure. You know, churches, synagogues, temples, they all kind of promote family, don't they? Isn't it all about family at church? It is, you bet. So when you start tearing down the church and weakening it, you're weakening the family unit. What is a family unit comprised of? It's comprised of individuals, right? Whatever the size of the family unit, whoever the members are, they're all individuals. And they function in their daily lives because they have rights. And those rights flow from what? The Constitution. So when you attack the Constitution, you attack faith in many different ways, on many different planes, from many different angles, you are attacking the family. And of course, if you can separate parents from children, you can attack the family even more. If you can teach children that the Constitution is not a good thing, or just forget about teaching them American history, or teach them somehow that secular is good, faith is bad, then you're also attacking the family, right? Remember what Al Gore said? You know, he's a flaming progressive. Al Gore stood up in front of that huge school assembly, I think it was a year or two ago, and he said, "Don't trust your parents. You know more than your parents. You know what's going on with this." That's driving a wedge, folks. That's driving a wedge between parents and children. And the same thing happens in schools. And the schools are really run by, unless it's a charter school, the schools are or a private school, the schools are really run by who? The unions. That's right. The unions run the schools. And if you go one step further, who is Barack Obama's biggest ally? The unions. $400 million. Let me repeat that. 400 million smackers for his election campaign in 2008. And it's probably going to be about that this time. What do the unions believe in? The unions believe in global government. Remember the famous words of Andy Stearns, SEIU, one of the nastier unions. Workers of the World Unite. And of course, the unions have been active in fomenting unrest in the Mideast. And I'm sure you've read those news reports, so I won't delve into them. And do you think that that has anything to do with Mr. Obama's, lackadaisical, who cares attitude toward the quote-unquote Arab Spring, which obviously has materially adversely affected the interests of the United States and the safety of the world, and allowed a diversion which took our eye off the ball with Iran, which could be one of mankind's greatest disasters? You bet. It's all tied in, folks. It's all tied in. It is all part of a plan. The more I research this, the more I find these dots, the more convinced that I am. You know, when the family is attacked through all these various nefarious sources, and there's many more, we don't have time to cover them all. What is the other underpinning of the family? Isn't it kind of safety? And by safety, I mean financial safety, you know, financial comfort, the ability to get food, the ability to get water, the ability to have heat, all of which takes money, the ability to better themselves, the ability to take advantage of the key element of the Constitution, which is an equal opportunity for all. Absolutely it is. There's no doubt. And when you can disturb the security of people, when you can play with their brains because you can make them feel insecure financially, physically, otherwise, you break apart that family unit. You create stresses which kind of work at the joints of the people that work within the unit. And if your attack is in concert, you know, if you're interrupting their security, and that's in concert with an attack on their church institution, which tends to bind families, and it's an attack on the Constitution, which tends to guarantee the rights of the individuals, number one, to be in a family unit, and number two, to do their own thing, if you will, in a family unit. Boy, you really kind of got it going on in terms of taking apart the family, particularly if you're teaching the kids that the parents don't know what they're talking about. You know, these are an awful lot of dots, don't you think? I mean, do you think they just happened haphazardly, randomly? No, not at all. This plan's been in effect for 40 or 50 years. It's coming to fruition right now. And 2012, the election in 2012, may very well be our last chance to stop it. Scary thought, but unfortunately true. Let's talk about security for the family. Let's talk about how they have this under attack. Number one, you know, the family unit, probably the first concern of, let's say, a parent for their kids is their safety, right? Wouldn't you agree with that, you parents out there that are listening? You want your kids to be safe. You want them to be happy. You want to provide for them. Well, think about all the things that Barry and his cohorts are doing to undermine that feeling of security, to make people anxious, to divide people, to drive them apart, whether it's at the nucleus of the family unit that we've been discussing generally here, or whether it's big picture, you know, the haves and the have-nots, the 99% and the 1%, the Occupy Wall Street that Barry himself and Nancy and Harry came out and said was so wonderful. Yeah, they're peaceful, aren't they? You bet. If you can undermine the security that a family feels, each individual and as a family unit, you can start to kind of crack that family. Now think about all the things right now which this government has created, even though they shrug their shoulders and say, it wasn't us, that create insecurity. There's financial insecurity. Many people don't have jobs. Many people have underpaying jobs. Many people are underemployed. There's housing insecurity. You know, I mean, there's no greater kind of source of home, of family, than home, right? And the housing thing is a wreck. I mean, how secure do you feel in your house if you owe $100,000 and it's worth $75,000? Or you owe $300,000 and it's worth $200,000? It really doesn't add to your security, does it? And what about rising prices? You know, on one hand, I have to laugh, well, cry, whatever you want to call it, when Barry stands up and talks about how concerned he is about the middle class, and he tries to deliver this populist message about the little guy and, you know, fair, and everybody has their fair share, and everybody has their fair this and fair that. Nonsense. Barry couldn't care less about that. Okay, Barry cares about two things, Barry and Barry's cause. And what Barry wants and what Barry's cause has as its goal is antithesis to the basic fundamental freedoms we all enjoy, the securities we hold high, and to those three pillars, faith, Constitution, and family. Do you really think, putting aside that George Bush did not handle it very well, do you really think that Barry has handled Iran well? Think about the insecurity you will personally feel or your family will feel, and think about the possible ramifications, by the way, of a nuclear Iran relative to the Constitution or relative to, you know, faith. Think about that. I mean, if Iran gets the bomb, with or without a huge conflagration and war in the Mideast with Israel and others, are you going to feel safe? Do you baby boomers, I remember this, do you baby boomers remember the Cold War? You remember the drills when you were underneath your desks? Think about that. Did you feel safe? Did you feel secure? Did it cause angst? Did it cause rifts and cracks in the family? And that was when the family, the Constitution, and the churches were not under overt attack as they are today. No, damn right. It didn't make you feel safe. It made you feel just the opposite. I really think that Barry and his cohorts don't want you to feel safe. Because if you feel safe, they can't control you. If you have money, they can't get you on their payroll, so to speak, you know, with the government dole-outs to make you beholden so they can buy your vote with the money that other taxpayers are paying. Think about it. Does this make sense to you? The more you can make people insecure on those different levels, the basic necessities of life. Think about gas, folks. Think about fuel for your car. Think about heat for your home. You know, these things are not getting cheaper. They're getting more expensive. Gas prices to fill your car have gone up dramatically just in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Also because of the instability in the Mideast, which Barry doesn't want to handle. And because Barry turned down the XL pipeline. Wow. You think Barry really has the middle class at heart? He turns down a pipeline that would keep gas prices low, provide lots of jobs, and actually give us exports to help us with our balance of trade and budget deficit. No, he doesn't care about what you're paying for what you put in your car. He wants you to pay as much as possible because it makes you insecure. It steals from you your wealth. And by the way, it happens to redistribute it to third world countries, an added benefit for Barry and his crowd. Because remember, they want to equalize income. They want to have social justice, not only between all of us that they care so deeply about, you know, us folks that cling bitterly to our guns and religion. Thanks, Barry. They also want to redistribute it amongst the nations of the world. Why do you think he's scaling back the military? Why do you think the sudden proposal, another distraction, but they want to get it done, to reduce our nuclear arsenal unilaterally? We're not getting anything for it. We're not getting any concessions from China or Russia. We're just going to take 80% of our weapons and throw them away. Cool. Great. Then everybody will really like us. Think about our contribution to the United Nations, $18 billion a year. Gee, that could help a lot of homeowners, couldn't it? Think about the fact that we knuckle under to the United Nations now, their resolutions, their Agenda 21, which we spent several weeks on the show describing for you. Scary thing. folks, look, this is all part of a plan. When he stands up there, this is a great example. I'm going to use it for you because this is pure Barry. This is pure progressive lies. This is pure sleight of hand. When he stands up there last week after the huge uproar in the Catholic Church over this edict, this mandate on Obamacare, which was an attack on the church and an attack on the First Amendment, and he tries to subvert it into an issue on women's health care. Come on. And he tells us that his accommodation, he didn't even call it a compromise, his accommodation. Oh, our Christian president is accommodating the church. How nice. When he talked about that accommodation, what he said was what? Oh, listen, they don't have to do this anymore. The insurance companies are going to pay for it. Well, gee, who pays the insurance premiums? The employer. So Barry wants us to believe does he really think we're this stupid? He really thinks that if he says, okay, the churches and the church institutions don't have to do this anymore because we're going to make the insurance companies pay for this. Does he really think that we don't know that the church and the church institutions are paying the health care insurance for their employees? Isn't it six of one, half dozen of the other, folks? He's still attacking religion, but he's lying to you about it. Listen, nobody lies to you without a reason. Can we all agree on that? Think back in your life. If somebody lied to you, and I think we've all had that unfortunate experience, it was for a reason, right? They didn't just lie to lie. It's a nice day for a lie. I think I'll just tell an untruth. No, there was a reason they lied to you. And the reason that Barry lies to you is that Barry has a plan. And the one thing he can't do is tell you what his plan is. He slipped a few times. He slipped with Joe the plumber. He slips once in a while with some of the progressive buzzwords like social justice and that kind of thing. But, you know, for the most part, he's brilliant. And he just throws those golden halos, all those little catchy words, all those little concepts, those catchy concepts that we'd all, makes us feel warm and fuzzy. He throws them out there and he thinks we're stupid enough to buy it. And you know what? According to the latest poll, 50% of us are. Scary thing. Do you really think that, I don't know how many of you heard about this, do you really think that the army chaplain, did you know that the bishops, number one, wrote this huge number of letters? Archbishops and bishops, etc. I'm not that familiar with the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, but all the high mucky mucks in the church wrote very strong letters. And there was this huge uproar. And then Barry came out with this subterfuge about, oh, okay, well, the church doesn't have to pay, and the church institutes don't have to pay, the insurance company has to pay, which in effect is the church and the institutions who pay the premium. Well, let's go one step further. You know, let's take it to its logical conclusion here. Because if you, look, the bishops wrote a letter. If this doesn't tell you what this really is, the bishops wrote a letter, and many of their congregations were read this letter by their priests or their pastors. Did you know that the army, remember, Barry is the commander-in-chief of the army. That's a scary thought. The army prohibited army chaplains from reading the Catholic bishop's letter in their masses for the troops. What do you think of that? You think that's maybe a little infringement on free speech, freedom of religion, freedom to protest? You know, some kind of basic tenets of the Constitution, which these poor men and women in uniform, brave souls that they are getting paid a pittance to defend and protect with their lives for our benefit? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's on purpose. You can't have this concerted attack on religion and on the Constitution unless it's on purpose, because all these things are by choice, folks. These are not slips. These are not things that happen because somebody forgot to turn off the lights. Conscious decisions were made to pursue these policies. Conscious decisions are made to lie to you when they get on TV. This is conscious. This is choice, and they have a reason. Think about the financial instability that they have caused, that they continue to cause with their policies. You know, since time immemorial, economics is economics. You can argue along the fringes, but the bottom line is, if you happen to have a free market economy, the bottom line is, if you incentivize, the economy grows and tax revenues go up. Do you remember when the president appointed the Simpson-Bowles Commission? That was a Democrat and a Republican. And they were charged with coming up with, number one, kind of a new tax structure, and number two, a good plan, an all-encompassing plan for reducing the budget and budget deficits and reducing national debt, and they did just that. And the president has completely ignored it. How many times have you heard him talk about everybody needs to pay their fair share and we need to restructure the tax law? Now, what have you seen him do about it other than promote higher taxes on the folks that create jobs? You know, many people fall for this, right? He's playing on basic human nature, haves and have-nots. If you have more than I do, I want some of what you have. That's not the way it works, but it is human nature. And he's playing it like a fiddle. And unfortunately, a lot of people are dancing to his jig. Way more than should be. I think that the Iran thing are, shall we say, muzzling Israel from an attack, our seeming inability while our president lies to us about the sanctions that he's put on. He forgets to tell us that the bill that was passed, only he can implement, and he hasn't. And that he can extend the implementation, which he will. When you see gas prices going up and our president, and on one hand tells us, gee, we need to get energy independent. We need to stop importing foreign oil. I'm concerned for the little guy. And then he stops a pipeline that lowers prices, increases national security, and decreases our dependence on foreign oil at the exact same time that you have all this Mideast unrest. Do you really think that's an accident? Of course it's not an accident. It's intentional. You know, he stands up there and talks about the fat cats and the rich people and the 1% and blah, 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 blah. He never talks about the 48% of the country that doesn't pay taxes. How about if each of them put in $50? You know, a little skin in the game? Wouldn't that be fair, Barry? And then he talks about, oh, how these Wall Street guys, they get all this money and these bankers and these big, bad capitalists. Hey, let me tell you something. Okay, let's expose that nonsense for what it is. You do know that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, which was, they went under when the government tried to redistribute wealth through home mortgages. That's right. That's exactly what that was. If you step back and look at it, when Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were forced to increase their portfolio of subprime mortgages from 5% to 50% in the late 90s by the Democrats, by the way, Barry was right in there swinging. Yes, he was. He was in there swinging actually back at Franklin Savings about 10 years prior, the lawsuit that started it all. When Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae got in trouble, the government under Barry took them over. So now they're government owned. Now, Barry plays a great game of being worried about the deficit. He promised us 3 years ago he'd have it in 3 years or he'd be a one-term president. Last time I checked, when he stepped into office, the deficit was a reprehensible $10.5 billion, give or take, and it just went up to over $16 billion. Good job on having that having that deficit and getting down the national debt, Barry. Oh, and by the way, Barry, thanks for that $1.3 trillion deficit budget you just submitted. The last one was voted down 97 to nothing, including by your own party. And now you're right back with basically the same rotten piece of toast. Anyway, while Barry is telling us about all these rich and evil people and all the bonuses they get, etc., let me tell you a little something about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and all of Barry's buddies over there. Okay, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae have lost about, give or take, $400 billion. Nobody really knows. Barry certainly doesn't care. There was a guy by the name of Franklin Raines. He was the chairman and chief executive officer at Fannie Mae. He was forced to resign. This is like the late 90s. Actually, the early 2000s. Because there were accounting irregularities found. And did you know that he left with a golden parachute valued at $240 million? That's right. Do you know what the accounting irregularities were? They were an irregularity of $6 billion. He cooked the books to get the bonus. In other words, he screwed you out of $6 billion while Barry and the rest of the boys looked on and applauded in order to get a $240 million parachute, also paid for by you and me. Tim Howard, he was the chief financial officer at Fannie Mae. Terrific. You know, he was working under Charlie Baby. And he was, I'm quoting now, a strong internal proponent of using accounting strategies that would ensure a stable pattern of earnings. And did you know that he got bonuses based on earnings? Of course, there were no earnings. You can't have a $400 billion loss and have earnings. Not even in Washington, D.C. Anyway, he was kind of found guilty, not guilty, shall we say, that the board of directors concluded that the books had been cooked in 1998, and he got a golden parachute of $20 million. Then there's a guy by the name of Jim Johnson. He was a former executive at Lehman Brothers. Okay, he was a Fannie Mae chief executive officer. And investigators found that, Fannie Mae had hidden a substantial amount of Johnson's 1998 compensation from the public. It was reported that it was somewhere between $6 and $7 million. Yeah, that's a pretty hefty sum, when in fact it was $21 million plus. Johnson, by the way, is currently under investigation for taking illegal loans from Countrywide. Remember Countrywide? They contributed greatly to the mess we're in the housing situation. Anyway, he's under investigation for taking illegal loans from Countrywide, and that was while he was serving as CEO of Fannie Mae. By the way, his golden parachute that you're paying for is $28 million. Now, folks, have you heard Barry talk about this at all? Well, it gets better. It gets better. Not only has Barry kind of not told us about this while he rants and rails about private sector compensation, but do you know what those guys do now? Franklin Raines, Tim Howard, and Jim Johnson? Franklin Raines works for the Obama campaign as his chief economic advisor. Tim Howard is a chief economic advisor to Obama right under Franklin Raines. And Jim Johnson, he was hired as a senior Obama finance advisor, and he was selected to run Obama's vice presidential search committee. Now, I ask you, do you think that's a coincidence? Do you think that these crooks and scum that caused a $400 billion loss to the taxpayers and walked away with $260 million in golden parachutes after being found to have cooked the books of taxpayer funds, that they're now working with and for the President of the United States? No. It's not a coincidence. These people are who they are, and they tend to band together and operate together under the cloak of secrecy and the guise of lies. That's what they do, and they do it really well. I mean, they really do it well. You can't not do it well and have a 50% approval rating with the economy in the tank, the world on the brink of war, Europe melting down, gas prices rising, and approximately 11 million homeowners underwater. Okay? You can't do it. If these guys couldn't lie through their teeth with a smile that everybody believes, their approval rating would be less than Congress, which I think is 10 or 11%. I want you to understand something. When there's inflation, which is caused by printing money, which is the policy that Barry kind of, shall we say, promotes, unofficially, of course, because there can't be any linkage between the Fed and the White House, with Ben Bernanke, another progressive, when we print money to fund debt and to fund spending, which Barry doesn't want to control, he can't even do a budget, that means there's inflation. And when there's inflation, your money buys less, right? The more dollars there are, the less each dollar is worth. You print lots of dollars, the dollars you have are worth less. And inflation is kind of a huge tax, isn't it? And it really hits the middle class, doesn't it? I mean, think about the things you've had to curtail because of the recent rise in price, recent over the last 2 years since Barry was in office. Rise in prices in food. How about the rise in price in energy? Did you know energy is 80% more since when Barry took office? And that's in the middle of an economic downturn that's kind of gripped the entire world. Do you have any idea what will happen to fuel prices if this economy starts revving up? On one hand, Barry takes credit. You know, this is another, here's another subterfuge. They take credit and they jump up and down about how domestic oil production is at the highest level it's been in 10 years or whatever their claim is on that given day. Here's what they forgot to tell you. You know, it takes anywhere from 3 to 7 years to bring on a well. All those wells which are increasing production right now, all those wells were permitted before Barry took office. You know what they don't talk about? How many new permits there are. Or what coastlines they have shut down. Or the fact that federal judges have ordered them to speed up the permit process in the Gulf and they've ignored it. They don't talk about that. They don't talk about not approving the XL pipeline from Canada so that our competitor China can take the oil instead. No net gain for global warming if you believe in it, folks. They don't talk about all that. Barry talks about campaign reform. What is the bastion? What is kind of one of the fulcrums of a representative republic? That's easy. Your vote. Your vote matters. So long as there's no election fraud. So long as there's no, shall we say, funny money monkey business. And so long as the elections are fair and open. Now, you know, Barry, when he first ran in 2008, said he was just going to go with public funding, and then suddenly he abandoned that. Just a month ago, he talked about how his campaign wouldn't take any money whatsoever from super PACs. Super PACs are bad things. You know what he forgot to tell you? The Republican super PACs at that time had about $95 million in cash, and his super PAC is struggling. They only had about $11 million in cash. The Republicans have been outraising the Democrats. And suddenly, Barry reverses position and very quietly starts taking super PAC money. That's right. Exactly the opposite of what he told us. Of course, he hasn't told us that. But them's the facts, Jack. And you know, Barry actually represented and worked for, as an attorney, Acorn? Yeah, Acorn. You know, I don't know how many indictments there have been in how many states against various people there at Acorn for voter fraud. There's a really interesting study that was done by Pew. Let me tell you how insidious this whole thing is, because, oh my, this is a scary deal. If you value your freedoms, you really need to listen to this. And I'm going to get into that, because these statistics will just they'll boggle your mind. This is the president who wants one fair vote. Remember what Holder did? You know, there's states who are requiring picture ID. Now think about it. Is there anything in life that you can do without a picture ID? I mean, you just about need it to go to the movies anymore. And they're not hard to get. They're very simple. But the Justice Department, on one hand, Barry is saying how concerned he is with free and fair elections. You know, fair. On the other hand, his Justice Department is saying, oh, it's illegal for you to require Mr. State, whatever state you are, a picture ID before somebody registers or before somebody votes. Do you remember that Congress defunded Acorn? And then in the stimulus package, the president did an end run, and by the way, other fundings also did an end run about that and started funding all the little offshoots of Acorn that sprung up after Acorn was indicted and kind of taken down the primrose path. Sure. It's on purpose, folks. It's to steal your elections. Saul Alinsky, Handbook of Radicals, the means justifies the end. That's where that saying came from. Saul Alinsky, Handbook for Radicals. Well, we're going to give you a little word from our sponsor, and that's Midpoint Trade Books of New York. And Rockin' SR Publishing right here in Wyoming, and Northgate Books down in Texas. Great outfits. And I'm gonna break up the cadence just a little bit here because I'm just kind of putting the final touches on. It's getting ready to go to the printer, the second book of my historical Western romance series. Bunch of national awards, been in multiple number one bestseller. It's coming out in April. I understand that there's a huge backlog of orders already, which is really cool. Thank you, readers. And it's a lot of fun. But you know, I have to tell you, as an American, I'm writing this story. I mean, sure, it has the universal energies and the adventure and romance of the West and of America. And it's a, I think anyway, and I guess others do too, it's a great story. You know, there's courage and there's tragedy and there's adversity and there's pathos and there's passions and all those things that make a great story. But there's a message in this book, and it's a message about American principles and the values of the Old West, which I think are the traits, if we can reach back to them like a touchstone, might guide us forward in the future. It's one of the reasons I write the books. It's my way of saying, hey, this is who we are, this is where we've been, and we need to reach back and bring that forward to move forward again. And when I'm writing that book and I'm doing these radio shows at the same time, the stark contrast between the information I'm bringing you about this evil subterfuge that's being perpetrated on America and her people by the progressives, when I juxtapose that against the message in my books, it makes it all the more stark, all the more real, and all the more chilling. We'll be back in just a minute.
An estimated 300,000 readers made Threads West, an American Saga, a number one bestseller and winner of 8 national awards in 2011, including Best Western, Best Romance, and Best Historical Fiction. Threads West, an American Saga. Author Reed Lance Rosenthal is a fourth-generation land and cattleman whose cowboy heart and poet's pen capture the spirit of the Western landscape. His long-standing devotion to wild and remote places and to the people, both past and present, who leave their legend and footprint upon America and the American West, is the inspiration for all of his writing. Threads West, the first of the series, available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, and digitally on Kindle, Nook, and iPad. Threads West. ThreadsWestAmericanSaga.com.
Let me just follow up that little spot. God, I love that music. by telling you that there's some great contests going on our websites right now that the publishers have put together. A really fun survey. It takes you just a few minutes, and it will get you a free MP3 of me, for what that's worth, reading you three chapters of the book, or excerpts from a number of chapters from the book. Should be fun. And also put you in a contest with some great prizes. And it registers you so that you get some information about the upcoming release of the book in April, because that's really a big event with all sorts of cool prizes and contests for when you buy the book on the release date or shortly thereafter. So www.mapsoffate.com and www.threadswestanamericansagaseries.com. Give them a visit. I think you'll find it fun. All right, back to more serious business, unfortunately. We were talking about the fact that one of the ways they're trying to undermine the Constitution, and I would say the family unit, right? One vote, one man. If you can eliminate that, you put another crack in that family unit, put another crack in individuals which comprise the family unit, you make them less secure about the country and about the systems that govern the country and about it being a representative republic. You accomplish lots of birds with one stone. Not only that, you get elected so that you can continue your progressive slant on the future of America. Well, the Pew folks, that's P-E-W, just did a study. It was just last week. How do you like this? Most of this has occurred since Acorn. You think there's any correlation? You bet. The study says that there's 1.8 million dead people still registered to vote. You think? And a lot of them vote. I guess they kind of rise up out of their crypts and graves and go on down there that first Tuesday in November and cast their ballot. And I bet it isn't the way you'd vote. How about this? There's 24 million registrations that are either invalid or inaccurate. 24 million. You know, 1.8 million people, dead people, can swing an election. 24 million registrations which are invalid. Just think about what that could do to a national election. But that's not all. There's like 3.75 million people who are registered in more than one state. Now, you know, some of that could be an accident or mistake. They didn't unregister when they left one state. They registered another, and they play by the rules and just cast their one vote. But what do you want to bet that a big chunk of that are people that vote more than once? I don't think that's very fair. What about that fair thing, Barry? What happened to that? And now you have your Justice Department standing in the way of trying to correct all this? Shame on you. Of course, it's all part of your plan. How about this? Oh, by the way, that number was 2.75 million people have active registrations in more than one state. Excuse me, I overstated it by a million. Oh, how about this? There's 51 million, shame on you folks if you're listening to this and you're one of this group. Researchers estimate at least 51 million eligible citizens, you know, truly eligible, are unregistered in the United States. That's almost a quarter of the population. Now, if you're not registered and you're listening to this program, or you know somebody that isn't, please, for you, for your children, for your children's children, for the rest of us and for the country, register, vote. This is kind of one of the fundamental rights you have. It's one of the fundamental protections you have, despite all this nonsense and voter fraud, to try and ensure and touch your future. Register and vote. All right. I promised you folks that we're going to get into the Republican candidates, albeit a week late, and we're going to do that. I'm just going to sum this up for you. It is my opinion, when I look at all these dots and many, many, many others, which we don't have the time to cover, that the plan is simple and it's brilliant. Number one, undermine the security of individuals and of the country. The two play off one another. Do it financially. Do it relative to their personal safety. Do it relative to their personal living needs, both cost and availability. Number two, at the same time, attack the Constitution. Whittle it away piece by piece. Nudge, as Cass Sunstein would say. Progressively, gee, there's that word again, progressively dismantle that document, which protects the people whose security you are stealing on many levels. Number three, weaken America abroad. Social justice on a sovereign state level and less security for the people. Number four, attack the churches. That's an indirect, maybe even a direct attack on the family, and it's an attack on the Constitution. It's an attack on religion, because progressives don't want you to think there's a God. The God is government. And as all these things kind of take hold, have you noticed this over the last 3 years? People feel less secure. They have less money. They're more dependent on the government. And the more folks that are dependent on the government, the more the government grows. And the more the government grows, the more power it has to implement the plan. It's all one vicious circle. The end result, folks, is the theft of your freedom, the theft of your security, and the theft of your country. And that is their plan, and it's on purpose. Let's talk a little bit about the Republican candidates, those guys that we hope one of them is going to win the White House in November. And if they can't save us from all this, at least they can greatly slow it down. We hope. Let me just say that there's a lot of Republicans that you can almost put in the progressive class. I'm not going to go down the list of names right now, but there's Republicans who are, there are actually Republicans who are more liberal than many Democrats. And they're called rhinos. I think that what we have going in the Republican campaign is, number one, Herman Cain was a threat to the progressives. You can't have a smart, successful, pulled himself up from nothing black man espousing conservative ideals because, wow, that might get people thinking, and you don't want people thinking. Nope. And if they are thinking, they want them thinking about your great speech, your latest lie to them. And poor Herman, who I think probably was not presidential material, but would have made maybe a great vice president, and I think that's really what it was angling for. Poor Herman got knocked out of the ball game, as you know. I'm not going to opine as to, you know, the veracity of the reports of his womanizing or whatever, but nonetheless, he vanished. And there's others that have vanished too, although he's probably the most notable. And now we're down to really four guys. Ron Paul, whose domestic policies are great. I mean, I really like his domestic policies. But his international policies are absolutely frightening and totally out of touch with the 21st century. Communications, missiles that can reach us in 5 minutes from who knows where. That might be Venezuela, since Iran and Venezuela are cooperating right now on a missile program. So Paul, for me, is out. You know, he's very strong on 50% of the equation and very weak and very dangerous on the other 50%. Then we have Mr. Gingrich. You know, he's a brilliant fellow. He's a great debater. There's no doubt he got some things accomplished, but he's also unstable. And I liked Gingrich, actually. If you'd asked me maybe 2 months ago, I probably would have said that he was my first choice, but the more I've listened to him, the more I've heard him talk about the, what I call the poor me syndrome. Poor me, everybody's picking on me. And the more I see his kind of knee-jerk, unthought-out reactions, the less I think he's presidential material. That brings us to Rick Santorum, who's obviously enjoyed a meteoric rise, both in notoriety and in delegates, with his recent wins in three states and him leading in a number of other states. I think Rick Santorum is basically a good fellow. I think that his weakness is that he kind of is bogged down in social issues, and I'm not saying they're not important, but I want you to think about this basic concept. If we're not safe and we're not free and we're broke, the social issues become a lot less important. I mean, you can afford to spend time on social issues when you have the basics handled. We're free, we're safe, we ain't broke. And then, of course, we have Mitt Romney. You know, I think Mitt Romney could be a good president. Is he everything I would like to see in a president? No. But I think he's smart. I think he has backbone. I think he's tough. And I think Santorum is too. And I think he's probably the best bet to defeat Barack Obama. I mean, maybe Santorum can win. I don't know. But I think the key thing, to be honest with you, folks, I'd vote for my boot before I voted for Barack Obama or any of his ilk. I'd vote for Mickey Mouse. Let's run Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, president and vice president. They would be better than what we have. My worry is that the Republicans have never been good at getting their message out. They just are terrible at it. And listen, Obama has the bully pulpit. He is about as smooth an operator and smooth a speaker as you're going to find. Never mind that everything he says is untrue. And we just don't have a concerted message. By we, I'm talking about conservatives. Because right now, conservatives are ostensibly represented by the Republican Party. And I think the real key to defeating Barry is the message this coming fall. My feelings are that Santorum would be my number two pick, Romney my number one pick. I'm not 100% jumping up and down over either one of them. But I think Romney has a respectable chance to beat Barack Obama. Santorum has a chance to beat Barack Obama. And the other folks in the race, Gingrich has no chance whatsoever, and neither does Ron Paul. So that is my kind of, in a nutshell, thumbnail thoughts about the Republican candidates. I'm not going to get down the trenches and talk about their policies and such, because in the end, their policies are not all that different from one another. But I think the real key, what we have to focus on, is we have to stand shoulder to shoulder to make sure that Barack Obama doesn't get a second term. Because, folks, if you think this dude was scary in the first term, when he had something to lose, both due to personal narcissism and overzealous ideological bent, you wait until he has a second term with nothing to lose. You ain't seen nothing yet. And it ain't nothing you want to see. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side, broadcasting from KGAB AM Cheyenne and WebTalkRadio.net on the EBN network. You can find our podcasts and archives at WebTalkRadio.net, and I invite you to do so. And all you folks out there in Cheyenne and the Intermountain West who are listening on KGAB and their affiliates, thank you for listening. You know, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, the bearer of sad news, but the better informed you are, the better you can act. And act we must. Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side. Have a great week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the WebTalkRadio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And, of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.